Thank you. In this final talk in the radio security session, I will present a novel scheme that can be used for anti-jamming broadcast communication without shared secret keys. This is a joint work with my colleagues from ETH Zurich, and we address the following setting. Assume that a sender wants to broadcast one or more authenticated messages to a potentially large number of receivers. For the communication, the sender uses wireless radio frequency transmissions, and our setting is general enough so that receivers may be unknown to the sender or they may be untrusted. Untrusted means here in the sense that they may actually be interested in obtaining the messages that the sender sends by themselves, but they might want to prevent other receivers from getting those messages. This setting is relevant for a number of applications, including alarm message broadcast used in pager systems, as well as for the broadcast of navigation signals. And I will come back to the second application example towards the end of my talk. Now, in general, radio frequency communication is vulnerable to jamming attacks. Jamming devices are more and more cheap. They can easily be obtained for a few hundred dollars and can be widely used by this. Now, there have been countermeasures against jamming attacks that have been in use for decades. First of all, these are spread spectrum techniques. In particular, frequency hopping spread spectrum as well as direct sequence spread spectrum. Now, those anti-jamming techniques, they share the following idea. The sender uses a spreading code or hopping sequence in order to spread the message over a wider frequency band, then transmits the message, and the receiver will have to use the same predefined sequence, hopping sequence or spreading code, in order to despread the message and to obtain the data contained in it. So the current schemes in use, they rely on a secret key or code that must be shared between the sender and the receiver before the communication. Now, when we put that together with the broadcast setting, we face the following problem. First of all, pre-sharing keys is complex and sometimes even infeasible if the receivers are not known to the sender before the communication. Also, public key cryptography does not solve this problem because the devices would still need to communicate, which they cannot in the presence of a communication jammer. But the situation is even worse. Even if secret keys would be pre-shared, then receivers still need to be trusted. They need to be trusted in the sense that they will not use the shared secret key for jamming the communication for the other receivers. This is what we refer to as the anti-jamming broadcast problem. Now, let me formulate the problem statement that we address in our work here. How can we enable jamming-resistant broadcast communication if the sender does not share a secret key with all or some of the receivers? This has been approached by prior works, and prior work have identified that shared group keys are actually a problem in that setting because because devices may misuse those shared group keys. And there have been solutions that were proposed, but all those solutions rely on shared secret information to build up frequency allocation tables or use secret trees that are then used by the receivers. And what we do, we ask actually the question, can we achieve this without having those pre-shared secret information? Now, in the rest of my talk, I will present you a solution to this, which we call uncoordinated DSSS. Uncoordinated DSSS achieves communication, broadcast communication, to an unknown or untrusted set of receivers in the presence of communication jamming without shared secrets. And the key idea is the following. We base the communication on the principle of DSSS, but we release the requirement of pre-shared secret keys by randomization. I will soon explain what I mean by that. And the key observation, actually, of the entire presentation is the following. When we have a sender that is transmitting messages to the receivers, even if some of the message transmissions are being jammed, or if the jammer is able to modify parts of the message, there may be transmissions that actually are received by the receiver. And those messages that are received, even if they are spread, the receiver will finally be able to despread those messages, meaning that the attacker cannot longer interfere with the transmission or prevent the transmission once that a spread message is received and the receiver. Now, let me go quickly a bit further into the principle of DSSS. This is the same image that I used before. And what actually happens in DSSS communication is that the data signal indicated by the blue signal here in the frequency domain gets spread over a wider frequency range, potentially even under noise level, which is indicated by the black line here. Now, on a logical level, the data bits, so assume this is a 1 and this is a 0 here, gets multiplied with a spreading sequence of a much higher rate, and finally the data being transmitted looks like this red curve here. Now, for UDSSS, this is exactly the same what is happening. So on the channel, UDSSS communication looks the same as DSSS communication, especially also for an attacker. But what is different in UDSSS is that the sequence that is used for spreading the message is not predefined, but chosen from a set of public code sequences. So the sender selects a random spreading code to spread the message, and after that the receivers will record the signal on the channel and despread the message by applying sequences from this public code set using a trial and error method. Now, on the sender side, we require message repetitions for a successful reception at the receiver, and this is due to two reasons. The first reason is that we cannot assume synchronization between the sender and the receivers, meaning that the receivers do not know when the actual message transmission starts. If the sender repeats the messages during the transmission, the receivers will finally be able to get those messages during their recording. The second reason for message transmission is that there's a possibility of successful jamming attacks. So even if some of those message transmissions are being jammed, then the receivers will still be able to retrieve the message after a while. Now, what is happening at the receiver is that it samples the signal on the channel and then uses an offline decoding phase during which the message gets despread. For that, I mentioned already the public code set. It is composed of n code sequences here, and each of the code sequences can be used to spread one message. Each code is used to spread one message bit. Those codes are composed of n chips each, and just to give you an idea, a typical setting would be to use 100, 200, 300 chips, which corresponds, in the case of 100 chips, to 20 decibel processing gain. For those codes, when they are in the order of 100 chips or larger, pseudo-random code sequences are actually well-suited, but other codes can actually be used as well, such as gold codes or Kasami codes, because they guarantee good autocorrelation and cross-correlation properties, which are required so that different spreading codes do not interfere with each other and still enable the receiver to determine which code sequence was used. And what is important to note here is that for successful despreading, this requires the receiver to hit both the correct spreading sequence that was used by the sender, as well as the right synchronization. So it needs to apply the right code to the right bit of the message. This applies to the receiver as well as to any attacker that might try to attack this communication. Let's go a bit further into the attacker analysis. There are different types of attackers that are being used that were considered in literature. First, there are non-reactive attackers, which means that they blindly jam a certain part of the spectrum in a sweep or random fashion, and they try to hit the right sequences. A second, more powerful type is reactive jammers that sense for ongoing transmissions. There are two subcategories. First, decoding jammers. those try to actually find the used spreading code by performing an operation similar to the receiver, and trying to identify the code, and then they construct the corresponding jamming signal in order to jam the rest of the message. This is a pretty powerful type of attacker, but still the attacker will need a certain time in order to record the signal, analyze it, and construct the jamming signal. And this time is actually what we leverage on in UDSSS to transmit the message before the attacker is able to do this. As a second type of reactive jammers, we consider repeater jammers that intercept the signal, amplify and filter it, and then re-radiate it without getting or requiring knowledge of the used spreading codes. Those repeater jammers have to fulfill stringent conditions on their position relative to the sender and the receiver, such that their jamming signal can be will arrive at the receiver within a chipping time. Now, the way we analyze these different kinds of attackers is that we combine a look at the jamming probability PJ with respect to a given message transmission. Included in this jamming probability is, for example, the number of parallel transmissions that a sender can use in order to jam a signal. Given this jamming probability, we use the following evaluation metric for our scheme: the message transmission time. How long does it take for the message to be received at either one receiver or multiple receivers with or without jamming? We first performed an analytical analysis of our scheme. In the case of one receiver, we have the simple equation that the message transmission time is composed of the sampling time at the receiver, which depends basically on the code rate and the message length and the code length, and after the sampling of the decoding time, which is required to despread the message, and this depends on basically, most importantly, on the number of bit despreading operations that a receiver can perform per second. In this analysis, we used kind of our basic approach was to say that we have to despread k bits before a decision is actually being taken, and we start the despreading operation only after the sampling has finished, but that this is kind of in a conservative approach. Just to give you an idea of the analysis for multiple receivers, where we assume that the message transmissions are received independently of each other, we have the following two graphs here. On the left-hand side, you can see the probability that a message is received by all, in this case, 100 receivers, depending on the number of message decodings that were required. On the right-hand side, we see performance, meaning the time after which all of those receivers have actually decoded the message for a fixed despreading time. We have analyzed that for different PJs, for different jamming probabilities or attacker strength, as you can see here. Now, what is important to note here is that the times that you can see here on that graph, they are no performance benchmarks. Actually, we can enhance our UDSSS scheme to yield the same performance as non-synchronized DSSS in the absence of jamming by using two parallel transmissions. The first transmission using only one public spreading code sequence that will succeed in the absence of jamming, and another spreading code set that uses normal UDSSS public spreading set. After that, we performed the implementation of our scheme, prototype implementation on USRP, so on software-defined radios, on a carrier frequency of 2.4 gigahertz. We used 8.4 Hamming codes, error correction codes, and bit scrambling, and so on. The results I'm going to show were taken from two USRPs that were positioned indoors at a distance of around 5 meters. And we got the following implementation results here. Depending on the code length per bit or the number of code sequences n, we get these performance results here. What we can see is that increasing the processing gain, increasing n, is much more harmful to the throughput of our scheme than increasing the code set size, this small n here. The second thing that we observe is that the throughput highly depends on the length of the message that is being transmitted. We analyzed that for 256 up to 2,000 message bits, and we can see that the throughput actually increases strongly with increasing message sizes. And for that, I will present you the following optimization, which is actually not part of the paper. The idea is to use UDSSS only to transmit the spreading key and not the message itself. And this will look as follows. We use, we first transmit the message using any random code from the entire code set that can be used. I mean, this is 2 to the power of message bits for spreading this message M. And only after that, we will transmit the key that was used for spreading M, and this time by using UDSSS, meaning using sequences from the public code set. By that, the receiver will first identify the key that was used for spreading the first message, and then be able to directly de-spread the message being transmitted. This has advantages in terms of quicker decoding times. Also, we can transmit longer messages and have a more flexible security level. Now, before I come to the end, I would like to talk quickly about an application of that scheme. I mentioned navigation signal broadcasts already in the beginning that are being used for positioning and time synchronization. The requirements for such system currently being in use are that signals from 3 or 4 base stations have to be received, and the precise timestamping of the signal reception has to be performed in order for the receiver to extract its own time and its own position. Now, the current systems that are being used for navigation signals, most of them suffer actually that they are not resistant against jamming attacks. Here, UDSSS can provide a solution because it provides anti-jamming transmission of multiple signals in general, so the receiver can receive multiple navigation signals in parallel. The scheme enables to use precise timestamping of the signal reception, no matter if there's a certain delay until the message is decoded, despread, but still the messages can be precisely timestamped at the time of reception at the receiver. And furthermore, the scheme allows to update the timestamp in each transmission of the message. This is for the anti-jamming part, but there's another advantage, which is anti-spoofing protection. So our scheme does not only provide the anti-jamming protection of the messages, but also anti-spoofing protection in the sense that a receiver cannot delay a signal within a certain threshold and in this way falsify the result at the receiver. This brings me to the conclusion. In our paper, we tackled the anti-jamming broadcast problem and proposed uncoordinated DSSS as a solution to it. There have been a number of other proposals very recently, one being the COP shared key DSSS that was presented at MobiHawk this year. The advantage of our scheme is that it can actually be used in the broadcast setting, which is not directly possible for this scheme here. This targets more pairwise communication. As an alternative to UDSSS, uncoordinated frequency hopping UFH can be used, which was also proposed recently. The basic idea of all those schemes is that they randomize the spreading operation and select the random code in a random way. One of the best applications for this is actually anti-jamming navigation signal broadcasts, and there, in my opinion, there is actually a requirement for further protection of those schemes against jamming attacks, which is currently not in place. This concludes my talk. Thank you for your attention.
I want to make sure I understand the model. There's no secret key information involved here. So what's to prevent a jammer from just setting up a fake broadcast station himself using all the public information and confusing the receivers?
Yes, the assumption here is that authenticated messages are being transmitted. So if...
Authentication requires secrets then.
Excuse me?
Then you have keys or something. if you have authentication, you need.
No. There is for the authentication of messages, this requires just a public key. So the receivers need to have the public key of the sender, but there is no secret key that needs to be shared between the sender and the receiver.
Any more questions? Okay, let's thank our speaker.